What I've discovered about this disease, and again, my laboratory has been working with young people on a daily basis. At first, I thought I was just this dedicated guy, you know, who wanted to save kids. But as I began to have good results, I realized that there was a method, even a prescription, to what we were doing. And probably there's several components of it, but the main component is one who is into violence or was into violent behavior thinks a certain way. People get into violent behavior because they think it will help them to survive. So it is really a disease masked as survival skills. So that's why it's easy for someone to get infected. Then they believe a certain way, they think a certain way, it leads to risk-taking behaviors that they think are normal, carrying a gun for protection, for example, and it produces a lot of emotional residue and doesn't work in the first place.
So how do you treat it? I mean, what do you do to counteract, these things that are leading to this infection of violence in communities?
Well, much like a medical approach, what do we do with heart disease? You give information, you treat, you do prevention, intervention, and rehabilitation. That's exactly what we do. I tell people what the risk factors are. I tell people what the thinking is. I tell people that they didn't learn survival skills. They learn death and incarceration skills. Some get it right away, some get it sooner or later, and some don't get it at all. But that's the medical approach. Medicine is all about a risk reduction. This is the same model. And I ask the question pretty much what doctors ask. Doctors ask, do you want to increase your chances of living? I ask the same question. Do you want to increase your chances of staying out of jail and not dying? And I ask the same questions. I use the same approach. And people do want to live. Think about this also. With regard to heart disease, there is one risk factor that you can't do anything about, and that's family predisposition, genetics, what runs in the family. That doesn't stop people from eliminating the other risk factors as best they can so that they can prolong their lives and decrease the risk of a heart attack. In my prescriptive model, destructive family and environment is a major risk factor. At this point, a lot of people think that means you're doomed. I'm saying you're not doomed. If you eliminate the other risk factors, you can greatly diminish the chance that you will be a victim or a perpetrator of violence. And I have seen that happen with the young people that we work with.
And so you've been doing this since the late 80s. I mean, what have the outcomes, besides the college graduates, have you seen that show you that what you're doing is the right way to tackle this, or one of the right ways to tackle this?
Well, I've never lost a young person who has taken a prescription, not one. So I know the prescription works. I think at this point, the disease is there's a lot more, well, it's funny, there are not enough doctors out there who know the prescription, who are using the prescription. I know that it works. The young people who take it stay out of jail. They stay alive. They stay free. They're able to become good citizens and not be part of the problem. At this point, I've got to get this prescription out to others. And when I see people dying in cities like Birmingham, Alabama, I know that there are folks there that need a prescription, that this can be prevented, and my job is to get it there.
Now, you mentioned Birmingham, and as you well may know, I mean, we have a rising homicide rate here, and according to the recent survey, we're the sixth most dangerous city in the country, actually more dangerous even than Oakland. And often the people who are involved in these crimes, whether they're victim or perpetrator, tend to be young African-American males. I guess, what do you think that needs to be done here in Birmingham to turn the situation around?
They need the prescription. It's that simple. They need people who can prevent, intervene, and rehabilitate from the disease of violence. It's that simple. The more people you have administering the treatment, the greater chance you have of a reduction in the disease. And I picked Birmingham because, not just because it does have a rising homicide rate. I picked Birmingham because symbolically, it was important to me. 50 years ago, half a century ago, there was a problem that was not on America's radar, and that was the problem of discrimination and racism. Dr. Martin Luther King and others said, this is a problem that cannot be ignored. It should not be ignored. But beyond that, he said, these are the specific strategies you must use to combat the problem. That's my approach here. My approach is to try and put this on America's radar. I'm not sure that anybody really cares. I don't hear any commissions. I don't hear anything, really. Life goes on every day when these young people die. So part of it is to put it on America's radar, in the black community and the white community. And the other is to say, this is what you do. When you leave here, this is what you can do to prevent the disease of violence.
Do you think part of the problem is the fact that, do you think it's partly a racist thing because the Amish community and this other school shooting involved white kids, and yet the violence that's going on in the inner cities tends to be, you know, minority African Americans? It's just people have sort of accepted it as the way life is in the inner city. I mean, do you think that's part of the problem with as far as no one is addressing the issue?
I think that is definitely part of the problem, and I think it's a part of the problem in both communities. I think everybody views it that way. It's happening over there. There's nothing we can do about it. I describe it as a value. I think there's a greater value placed on certain lives. I think people can easily read between the lines what I'm saying here, but I think there is certainly a value placed on the lives of certain people and less of a value placed on others.
And you mentioned that you were inspired by Martin Luther King Jr. in the civil rights movement. I guess, I mean, to me it sounds like you see what you're doing as kind of an outgrowth of what took place in the 60s.
Well, the question I use to frame it is, what good does it do to win the right to ride the bus if you're going to get on the bus, tear it down, and destroy everybody in it? Certainly, that is what has happened for a lot of young people. A lot of those folks fought real hard for the right to do things, but because of certain things that have happened in the interim, in the years since the civil rights movement has gone by, those young people are now giving all those things away. In many areas, Rosa Parks could not ride the bus. So certainly, to me, it is updating the civil rights movement, and that's why I'm calling it the Alive and Free Movement.